From WXXI News, this is the Summer of Food on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a question. What do pickles, kimchi, cheese, beer, what do they all have in common? The answer is they are all fermented. And when you think of fermentation, perhaps those foods and beverages or something like kombucha come to mind. But how does the process of fermentation actually work? Fermentation revivalist and author Sandor Katz calls it the transformative action of microorganisms, something that happens spontaneously in nature. But then there's the human element. As Katz says, we create the vessels and make the process happen on our own terms, even on your own at home. So the next time you make sauerkraut or wine or bread, remember that you're fermenting. It's an art and a science, and one you can learn about at the inaugural FLX Fermentation Festival at the Cumming Nature Center that's coming up August 16th through the 18th. Interest in the process is growing. Farmers and producers in the Finger Lakes region say this region is uniquely suited for the process, with vineyards and agriculture. And the festival will include talks, workshops, and of course, tastings, food. We'll preview all of that with our guests this hour who kind of help us demystify fermentation. And I will welcome our guest now. The person who's done so much to put the festival together is Vincent Feit, Education Program Coordinator and Assistant to the Director at Cumming Nature Center. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Also with us is Pilar McKay, a founding member of Silver Lake Brewing Project and an agriculture economic development educator with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ontario County.
Hi,
I tried
Evan.
To do it in one breath, Pilar.
You did a great job.
It was very close.
Job.
It was very close. Great Hired. Having you back here. Petra Page Mann is with us in studio. She has the voice of a phone guest who you go, man, if I could put that voice in a bottle, I'd pour it on pancakes. But now we get to see what she looks like in person. She's the founder and farmer with Fruition Seeds. Welcome to you. Nice to have you.
You're much too kind, Evan.
Well, it's great to have you. And on the line with us, Sandor Katz, a fermentation revivalist, author of Wild Fermentation and the Art of Fermentation, and keynote speaker at the festival, who has one remarkable story that's been reviewed in so many places. Sandor, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Well, I want to make sure we understand what's coming our way with the inaugural festival. So August 16th through the 18th. Vincent, why don't you just kind of give us the overview? Because I know for people who are going to be hearing about some of these events this hour, some of them you're going to have to register, kind of get some stuff in advance, maybe some not. Give me a sense for what's coming up.
Absolutely. So the weekend kicks off on Friday night. We wanted to highlight some of the regional businesses who are partners through a dinner at Hollerhorn Distilling. It's a brand new, well, fairly new distillery in Naples, New York. So we'll be hosting a dinner there. Chef Michelle Hollerin from Kim Genius and from Hollerhorn Distilling is putting together an awesome menu from local foods, fermented foods, Korean barbecue. And it's going to take place in a really magical setting there in Naples, right next to Hightower, with some lovely views of the hill and the sunset. So we'll be kicking off with that dinner, and tickets for that are available now online at the RMSE website. Saturday is the festival where we have artisans from winemakers, cider makers, a variety of fermented vegetables who will be at the Nature Center sampling their products from 10 to 2. And we have presentations throughout the day. Petra will be giving a presentation on the fermentation of seed saving, and we'll have a talk on demystifying wild fermentation, a trend in the fermentation world that may be misunderstood. So we're going to be talking to a couple winemakers and cider makers and brewers and their perspective on wild fermentation. Sunday is the advanced workshop with Sandor Katz. So that's where we'll dive into some more advanced ferments from around the world for different food products, and Sandor will be helping folks create those, take home a few, and we'll sample them with lunch at the end of that day. And that day, Michelle Hollerin will be joining us again from Kim Genius and Hollerhorn. She'll be preparing lunch for that class. And the last thing I'll say is on Saturday during the day, there are workshops for folks who are interested in fermentation, maybe have done some at home and want to hear Sandor talk about the basics, the foundational principles of fermentation.
All right. So are you online with information on this?
We are online at the RMSC webpage for the Cumming Nature Center, and tickets are available there as well as all the details. And Facebook is also a great place to check out details and find links for tickets.
Yes, it's the FLX Fermentation Festival. And when Vincent said, starting with Friday, and again, it's Friday, the 16th of August through the 18th.
Correct.
Coming up here. So before we kind of dive in with Sandor, I want to ask both Petra and Pilar to kind of just give us a little overview of what they're most excited about to share with the public, and then we'll kind of dive into more detail later in the hour. But, you know, you're a very, I think it's fair to call you an educator. I mean, when Petra emails me, or she's always so kind and got so much information to share. And now you get to do it in this setting here. What excites you most about the coming festival?
Well, I confess, I'm really interested in how the macro is the micro and the micro is the macro. And so people realizing that food and these microorganisms, oh, wait, I'm a microorganism. You're a microorganism. And we're all fermenting together, transforming food together, transforming our society together. So at the risk of going meta on us, I really love that this, quote, trend is the response of so many things transforming in our world. And so the diversity of flavors, I just love on every level. And certainly it's just delicious, but it's delicious on every level. And that the Finger Lakes has been building this culture, haha, for decades, centuries, millennia. And now we have our inaugural festival. Vincent, it sends shivers down my spine. Thank you so much for making this happen.
Never apologize for going meta, by the way. Go meta. Go meta if you want. PLR, what stands out to you? What are you most excited about to share with the public?
Well, I'm excited that this is brand new. And if, from my perspective, I have all the ideas that I know what to do with. But for other people to get ideas as they come to this festival and maybe start their own projects and to see those projects grow, I think festivals like this is where that's really important. So thank you, Vincent, and Coming Nature Center for bringing all these people under one roof, so that if people didn't know how to do this or didn't have the skills, or most importantly, didn't know where to ask, you're providing them that resource. So I can't wait to see the projects that start from this and where that goes. Everyone here is a farmer in something. I'm just a farmer in ideas, which I will gladly give to other people to make their own projects out.
Don't be so humble, Pilar.
Well, I want to turn to Sandor Ketz and, you know, sort of maybe at some risk here. If you don't mind, Sandor, I would love for you to give our listeners a little bit of your own personal background, because as I understand it, your, you know, sort of your journey to fermentation was somewhat circuitous and somewhat spiritual, you know. So can you take us through the process that kind of brought you to this?
Sure. I mean, there were a number of steps that sort of, you know, brought me into my obsession with all things fermented, that led me into writing books and, you know, this role that I describe as a fermentation revivalist. And, you know, I would say it started when I was a kid. And I grew up in New York City, and I loved pickles. And my grandparents were immigrants from what's now Belarus, and you know, in the, you know, sort of culture of New York City, which with so many immigrants from Eastern Europe, there were lots of fermented pickles, what we call in New York sour pickles, and elsewhere they're often known as kosher dills. And I just, you know, from, you know, my earliest memories, I just always loved pickles. So I was drawn to this lactic acid flavor of fermentation. And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, flavor is a really important aspect of fermentation. And if you walk into a gourmet food store anywhere, most of what you're going to see and smell are products of fermentation, because fermentation creates such compelling flavors. So I would say flavor is the first thing that drew me in. You know, the second thing that made me start thinking about fermentation, you know, was potential health benefits. And I spent a few years in the late 80s following a macrobiotic diet. And one of the things that macrobiotics really emphasizes is the digestive benefit of pickles and other live culture foods. And I started noticing that these pickles that I'd been eating and loving all of my life, that whenever I would eat them, even if I would smell them now, even if I just think about them, it would make my salivary glands squirt out saliva under my tongue. And I began to really you know, associate these foods in a very tangible way with getting my digestive juices flowing. And then once I started thinking about that, I also started reading about, you know, some of the immune-stimulating benefits of probiotics. And in the early 90s, I tested HIV positive, and I, you know, just became much more conscious about health and nutrition, and, you know, thought that I could use, you know, all the immune-stimulating benefit I could get. And I started really seeking out fermented foods for this reason. But I still wasn't making them. And, you know, really my, you know, the catalyst for, you know, getting me to investigate how to ferment things myself is that I moved in 1993 from New York to rural Tennessee, you know, part of a broader effort to, you know, have a healthier lifestyle, get involved in gardening, have fresh organic vegetables, spring water, et cetera. When I started gardening, I started tuning into the, you know, practical aspect of fermentation, because I was such a naive city kid, it had never occurred to me that in a garden all the cabbage is ready at around the same time, all the radishes are ready at about the same time. So the first year I was gardening and I had this row of cabbage, I thought to myself, I'd better learn how to make sauerkraut, because I, you know, I knew that sauerkraut was you know, a strategy for preserving cabbage. And, you know, I learned how to make sauerkraut from the joy of cooking. And I couldn't believe how simple and straightforward it was. I couldn't believe how delicious, you know, my young homemade sauerkraut was. And then I just started to experiment. And, okay, can I do the same kind of process with other vegetables? Yes, you can. I love to eat yogurt. How difficult is it to make yogurt? I started making yogurt. I'd been baking bread. I was like, well, maybe I don't need a packet of yeast. How does sourdough work? And I started playing around with sourdough. So, and, you know, and slowly, you know, that just developed into, you know, an obsession with all things fermented. And then, you know, I got a reputation among my friends. They started calling me Sandor Kraut because I was always showing up with sauerkraut. And I got invited to teach. And the first time I taught a sauerkraut-making workshop, which was in 1998, you know, what surprised me is, you know, that a lot of people were projecting all of the anxiety that they'd been taught to have about bacteria onto the process of making sauerkraut. And the big question was, you know, how can I be sure I have good bacteria and not some, you know, dangerous bacteria that might make somebody sick growing in my jar of fermenting cabbage? So I just got interested in, well, first of all, understanding, you know, what the parameters for safety, what the real risks were, and I got interested in demystifying it for people, and that led me into, you know, my books and, you know, a career as a fermentation educator.
You make it all sound so easy. All you people make it all sound so easy.
Well, it is. That's the thing. Fermentation's not rocket science. I mean, people have been fermenting for thousands of years with, you know, extremely, extremely, you know, basic facilities and equipment, and without the insights of microbiology, you know, as to what was actually happening. You know, now we understand exactly what's happening. And, you know, in terms of safety, I can tell you, with fermenting vegetables, sauerkraut, kimchi, pickles, according to the USDA, they cannot find one single documented case of food poisoning or illness from fermented vegetables anywhere in the world. There are very few foods you could say that about. Fermentation is a strategy for safety that's been really well proven by, you know, the passage of the millennia.
So, listeners, if you think there's something that's gone bad with fermentation, that's like the razor blade in the Halloween candy story. It's never happened. Never happened. You hear about it, you get scared.
Distinguish. I mean, salamis are fermented also. I mean, when you're, you know, in the fermentation of meat, in the fermentation of milk, it has happened. In the fermentation of vegetables, it has not happened.
In vegetables, right.
But it's really because, you know, high-protein animal foods are intrinsically a little bit more dangerous, and fermentation still makes them safer than they were before they were fermented. But there are cases we can find of, you know, fermented cheeses or meat products that have resulted in problems. But with fermented vegetables, there just are none.
And your views on fermentation and death, I mean, even bacteria decomposing in the body, is comforting to you?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, let's just make it a little bit broader. Like,
yeah.
Fermentation is the basis of soil fertility. If fermentation, you know, microbial breakdown is how all, you know, the leaves that fall off of trees, excrement from animals, dead bodies, you know, all former life is renewed by the action of microorganisms, breaking them down into nutrients that can sustain further life. And so, you know, when we talk about the cycle of life and death, you know, really we're talking about the cycle of life and death and fermentation.
That's why Sandor Katz is coming to the FLA, the inaugural festival here. You want to jump in here, Vincent?
Well, I mean, as Sandor finished saying that, one of the beautiful flowers that Petra brought in from her farm literally wilted and took a bow right as he said that. That I'm not
beautiful pink up, flower that just did a nosedive right under the desk there.
But I did look up some information on topsoil degradation due to intensive farming practices, and the according to Scientific American and the UN, the FAO, we're at risk of running out of topsoil around the world in about 60 years, and it takes 1,000 years to generate 3 inches of topsoil. And compost isn't the only answer to that. Changing farming methods is part of the question, but decomposing things, composting things, and rebuilding our soil is one of the many conversations that we can have through this event, which is why the Nature Center wanted to host the event. We explore the complex relationship that humans have with the natural world, and food and farming is a huge part of that.
See, Vincent, you got to be careful, because there's two subjects on this show that if you bring it up, the rest of the hour is hijacked by them. Parking in Rochester and composting. Okay. And you bring up composting, and you're going to open the floodgates. People are going to have questions or comments, or how do I? Which is great. But I like the tie there, because I think you're right. I think there's so much more interest. And Sandor, and what I see in the interest in composting is probably very similar to how you've described the interest in fermentation in general. People want to take a little bit more ownership. They want to have a little bit more direct hand. They want to be closer to it. They want to be doing things that are probably better for themselves or their environment. Do you feel that way, that that's why fermentation is sort of on a bit of a roll now?
Yeah, sure. Well, let me talk for a moment about this idea of like fermentation as a new trend in food. And yes, absolutely. There's, you know, heightened awareness of fermentation and interest in fermentation, but the actual products of fermentation have just enjoyed such enduring popularity throughout history. I mean, if you think about, you know, wine and beer, if you think about bread, if you think about cheese, if you think about, you know, salamis and hams and other kinds of cured meats. You know, fermentation just has been integral to food traditions everywhere. You know, before our lifetimes, before our great-great-grandparents' lifetimes, and you know, I mean, I think it's so exciting that people are becoming more aware of it, more interested in it, desiring to learn how to do it in you know, home and restaurant kitchens. But it's been there all along, and you know, every one of us has you know, eaten fermented foods and drunk fermented beverages almost every day of our lives, and this is true, you know, around the world in pretty much every cultural tradition, culinary tradition.
Well, as we talk about fermentation, listeners, if you've got questions, we can hit those. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And we'll hit a lot of different themes as we go throughout the hour. Our guests are talking about the inaugural FLX Fermentation Festival that's going to happen at the Cumming Nature Center, August 16th through the 18th, and they're getting you set for that. Sandor, what are you going to focus on when you're here? I mean, I think Vincent's kind of touched on it some, but there are so many different things that you could do with fermentation if you're here on one day or one weekend. What are you going to bring to the inaugural festival here?
Well, you know, at the Saturday event, I'm going to be sort of doing a series of short like sauerkraut making fermentation 101 workshops. And I mean, sauerkraut was my gateway into fermentation. And just, you know, in general, when people, you know, want to know where to start, that's what I would suggest for most people is fermenting vegetables. I mean, partly just because it's so intrinsically safe, and to whatever degree people might be projecting their anxiety about bacteria onto the process. I feel like I can really calm them down, and sauerkraut is just the safest place you could possibly begin. It's really straightforward. It's a very flexible process. It's a very versatile process. And I love to share that with people, and it really illustrates, some fundamental concepts of fermentation to get people ready if they want to try some more elaborate processes. On Sunday, I'll be doing a more extended workshop with a smaller group of people that will be focused on, I don't want to call them challenging ferments, but they're just ferments that people might not be familiar with, and just some different kinds of twists. Like we'll be making some pao cai, which is a Chinese style of fermenting vegetables, and really all of the literature talks about the idea of sauerkraut coming from China. And I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to travel with a Chinese American friend of mine in China, and we were able to learn quite a bit about some different fermentation traditions in China. And so I love to share a pao cai with people. We'll be making some Japanese nuka pickles, which is Japanese cuisine has an amazing variety of different styles of pickles, and nuka pickles are pickled in a medium of rice bran. And the rice bran becomes like a perpetual pickling medium. So we'll be making that, and then we'll be also making nam, which is a Thai style of fermenting pork in a medium of rice and garlic. We'll be doing some more, unusual ferments, or ferments from different parts of the world that Americans might be less familiar with. So beyond that, I just love to answer questions. I love to, hear what people are thinking about and worrying about and wondering about, and help demystify the process for people and, point people in the direction of good information.
All right. So as we talk about fermentation, here's a question for all of our guests as we're going to kind of shift towards, we're going to talk about food systems. I really kind of want to dig into some of the work that Petra is doing. It's a great chance to kind of talk to her in person about this and for you to learn about the festival that's coming up here. But it was a decade ago that Scientific American first asked the question, can fermentation save us from climate change? Sandor? Can it?
Well, I think obviously, radical shifts in how we're producing food can have, can sequester carbon, can, possibly change our trajectory. I don't think anyone can answer that question with a yes or no answer. But, to me, we need to try.
Yeah.
Even if we don't know if we can, we have to find, more sustainable and regenerative ways of life. And certainly, fermentation is part of all sustainable food systems, and it's part of culinary traditions in every part of the world. And I think it's a really, tangible way that, anyone can, begin to empower themselves to, break out of this infantilizing role of just being a consumer of food and, be part of, be part of and become closer to, a more regenerative way of feeding ourselves.
Petra, how do you view climate and fermentation question?
I love this phrase that I kind of just thought of, so it might be incredibly half-baked, but I think there's a connection between climate denial and climate disconnection. And one of the things that I love most about fermentation is that it connects people with past, with our ancestors, with our food, with our friends, with the future, you're not generally going to make a ferment and then eat it right then and there. It's fundamentally a hope, a dream, something that you're creating for the future. And that might be tomorrow. It might be a week from now. I endeavor to make miso that will be 20 years old and 50 years old that I can taste all those decades later. And certainly, you know, I can't even fathom what the tamari in Japan that's over 2,000 years old. I shiver to think of what that tastes like, which is all to say, I think fermentation connects us. And if climate denial is climate disconnection, anything that connects us is connecting us to whatever it is that will bring us through. And I don't think, of course, there will be any one thing, but what I love about your approach, Sandor, and your personal effect on my life is that you're a watershed human. And a revivalist is a very convivial way to say it, but you're just a watershed human who has given permission to myself and everyone that I know, honestly, which maybe says something about my tiny little bubble in my fermented life. But you have profoundly connected so many people and given us permission to play and explore and think of our world and our food and ourselves really differently. And you coming here to this inaugural Finger Lakes Fermentation Festival is just another expression of that connection coming to life.
I have to say, listening to Petra talk about the connection versus the disconnection that people have with the land and maybe with food systems, being disconnected from where food comes from, as many people are, and not thinking about climate's impact. For me, having covered wine for many years, there was this debate, especially about a decade ago, about biodynamic wine. And, you know, sort of the scientists were looking at biodynamic going like, that is weird. You're burying a cow horn in the soil and you're waxing.
Chamomile
and
intestines?
Yeah, you're waxing and waning. I don't know what's happening here. But here's where even sort of the scientific purists were given some ground. They said, even if you don't believe that some of the processes have any impact, those people are in touch with their land. They know what their land has to offer. They know how it works together. They're not just out there spraying chemicals and then walking away. They're very connected to it. And when you're that connected to it, you almost can't help but get a really good product. So, you know, it's just interesting hearing about the disconnect, and that's sort of where my brain went, to a different fermented product anyway. So, Pilar, how do you look at the question on climate and fermentation?
Well, when we think from a food systems perspective, obviously the best thing we can do to support our local economies is to buy food that's from our area. And I think with fermentation in its basic level is preservation of food. And when you live someplace like we do in New York State, we don't get many, Petra can very much say this, like bumper crops, basically. It's not like you get to have two seasons of apples. You get one, and you better sauce it. or cold storage developed here, yay. But the idea is that the more that we ferment what we make, the more we get in touch with our local economy as well. So I can't fault anyone for buying fresh strawberries in January. I've been maybe known to do that myself. But the more we're looking at this global food print, the less connected we are to our local economy. So anything that helps us preserve what we're already growing is going to be healthy for the environment. That's kind of my perspective on it. And we do get everything all at once, like Sandor had mentioned. It's, you know, you don't get to have radishes 6 months of the year. Well, you can. If you follow what Petra says,
Let's talk.
But, you know, here in New York State, it's not reasonable in January to have asparagus. But there are ways for you to have asparagus in January if you're doing the right practices to preserve your food. That's healthy. That's healthy for our economy. As I often say in New York State, we support every sort of diet. You just have to go out there and buy the food.
By the way, you know, when we had craft cocktail makers on, in the same way that when I asked them, what do you do if someone orders an appletini, you know, just watching their reactions, I want to ask, what do you do, Petra, if someone brings fresh strawberries from Chile in January?
Oh, I'm the biggest hypocrite on the planet, Evan. I wouldn't dream. I mean, I note it, and then I note all the rest of the day how I myself
judge
myself.
We're all hypocrites, aren't we?
Oh, man, I'm glad
it's
we're
hard.
In this boat. So, I would love to say, something that wouldn't make me, something that wouldn't get me kicked off the air, but I don't. So
no,
I turned the mirror straight
to myself
and walked
out. I actually found that really endearing when Pilar brought that up. I found that really endearing because we can all strive to do things differently and better, and that's a process. But, you don't get to 100% sort of purity overnight. And I think that's a valuable thing, whether we're talking politics, food, climate, et cetera. Kat writes to us, by the way, to say, it is so cool you get to talk to Sandor Katz, an icon in my industry. I always learn new things from his books and talks, and I would love to go to one of his camps. Is he still doing those? That's what Kat wants to know, Sandor.
Sure. A couple of times a year, I host residency programs where I live in Middle Tennessee. And the next one I'm hosting is at the end of October, beginning of November, and that one is full. And shortly I'll be posting on my website, wildfermentation.com, dates for the next residency program, which will be next April. So about twice a year, it's about 5 days, 12 to 14 people camping in my yard and fermenting and eating in my kitchen.
Awesome stuff. So Sandor Katz on the line with us, who's coming to offer a keynote and presentation and some outstanding work that you can be a part of if you want to be at the inaugural FLX Fermentation Festival. It's at the Cumming Nature Center, August 16th through the 18th. Vincent Feit is here, the man who has put so much of that festival together. You just heard Sandor Katz, who will be here for that. Petra Page Mann, founder and farmer with Fruition Seeds. Pilar McKay, founding member of Silver Lake Brewing Project and Agriculture Economic Development, educator with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ontario County. That's it. So on the other side of this break, can we talk seeds a little bit? Let's talk seeds.
All day
long. Let's
talk
food systems. We're talking fermentation and getting you set for the festival. It's the summer of food right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, there's an election next week that you might not be aware that is even happening, and you won't get to vote. But the outcome will matter. We're talking about the Board of Elections. The Democratic commissioner has long been Tom Ferraci. He's retiring. Three women are running to replace him. And we're going to talk to them about why they want the job, voter access, who outreach targets, and more. That's Friday. Welcome back to Connections and the Summer of Food. And Petra Page Mann is now walking around the studio with, what did you bring, by the way? What are you passing out here?
Oh my goodness, it's highly proprietary. Not at all. They are cucumbers, but they are a brand new variety of cucumber, thanks to Cornell University. They are called Salt and Pepper. And they're one of my favorites for a lot of reasons. Of course, they're sweet and blah, blah, blah. But they're a brand new variety. Who's heard of Salt and Pepper? But their parents, one is an heirloom variety from hundreds of years ago in Boothby Bay, Maine. It's called the Boothby Blonde. And then its other parent is Markimor 76, which was released from Cornell in, you guessed it, 1976. A classic American slicer, nothing fancy. But it did have a lot of disease resistance, and it was really productive. So Cornell crossed these two. Boothby Blonde, the heirloom, and the modern OP Markimor 76. And we have in our hand one of their progeny. So it's the best of both worlds. And what this lifts up for me, too, I love music. I love that we can listen to music thousands of years old and hundreds of years old. And I love that new sounds right here in Rochester are being produced right here, probably within a mile of this studio. And I think we have the same responsibility in food and in everything. And I think if we stop, our culture ceases to exist. So I love this cucumber, and it's delicious. It's so sweet. It's so crunchy and creamy all at once. But kind of that story, and specifically that kind of honoring, pairing the history, the deep ancestry of where we've come with the modern needs that we have for disease resistance. It's the best of both worlds.
Well, I've never wanted to just eat a cucumber like an apple.
That's why I brought you 50. Yeah,
there are a lot here. And it's almost enough to be payola, so we're going to have to send most of them with Rob, the engineer, who is so happy back there. And also Brett Dahlberg, our colleague, who is like a heat-seeking missile for free food. So it's going to be a very happy situation here. But take me through how fermentation impacts your world.
Yeah, so these cucumbers, in fact. So it's harder to tell in a cucumber that they need to be fermented because we eat them as an immature fruit. But imagine a tomato. We also ferment the seeds. And a tomato, the ripe fruit that we're putting on our BLTs, those, can you picture the seeds? They're surrounded by a clear gelatinous membrane. And that membrane is, in fact, full of anti-germination compounds. You know, if I close my eyes and pretend I'm a seed, it's not very hard. And what are the conditions I need to germinate? If I'm in a wet place, in a warm place, oh, I'm in a tomato. And evolution has a brilliant solution for this. They encase all of the tomato seeds in this little gelatinous membrane of anti-germination compounds. So we need to ferment them. If we don't ferment them, we'll get about 30, 40% germination, which isn't bad for a home gardener. You know, but for us, we like to send seed. And if it germinates less than 90%, we don't put them in packets. So we ferment them for just a few days, and it's just a really beautiful process as well. It goes from this like mess of seeds and fluff and stuff, and then it separates into these gorgeously separated striated layers of the dense mature seed on the bottom, clear water in the middle, and then all the pulp and immature seed on the top. We just pour the immature seed off, and in that process, that fermentation process also eliminates a lot of seed-borne disease as well. So it's simultaneously ensuring that the next generation is going to germinate more readily, also be healthier with less disease. So honestly, it kind of does the same thing to us and our microbiome that it does for these individual seeds that we are fermenting at Fruition Seeds.
What does the fermentation process actually consist of?
It consists of having your cake and eating it too. So going and harvesting your tomato and making your salsa, but then squeezing out the seeds. And just, you know, if you just have a handful, a jar is perfect. And you put, say, if you have X amount of pulp seeds, you put in another X, so you have of water. And then you cover it because your fruit flies are really happy that you're fermenting tomatoes, Evan. Mm-hmm. So you cover it with a tea towel so you exclude them from the party. I'm not generally into exclusion, but that is an exception. And then you wait 3 days, maybe 4 or 5 days if it's getting cool in the autumn, but generally it's 3 days on our farm in the summer. And what's fun about, I mean, who needs televisions? If you have a clear jar, you can watch this alchemy happen. I should do a time lapse video
yes.
of this.
Pilar is like, yes. What does it look like?
So on it. It's really, I mean, I'm certainly biased, but it's really beautiful and it's really fast. And then it's just so simple to pour off all of that immature seed, all of that pulp on the top, and you're left with this beautiful, dense, mature tomato seed on the bottom.
After 3 days, maybe 4 or 5 in the autumn. That's
yeah.
It.
And you know, when I'm doing one of the conversations at the FLX fermentation inaugural event on the Saturday. And so I'm excited I'll actually have mason jars with multiple days. So you'll be able to see the entire progression during that day as well.
We're listening to Petra Page Mann, who roughly has the voice of, if you die and the afterlife is better than you imagined, she's like the guide.
When my sister-in-law met Petra, she said, is that an angel? This is a true story. And if you haven't been to Fruition Seeds to pick up seeds,
she may be.
You are missing out.
No, she may be an angel. Like, it's actually a possibility thing. But Angela writes to us to say, I thought fermentation was associated with things blowing up in a basement or a kitchen. I want to go ahead, Petra, and I want to get Sandor in on that too. What would you say to Angela?
I think there's lots of different ways to approach everything, and we all have different associations with every word. But come visit us at Cumming Nature Center, and you will see you'll see 1,000 other flavors. You have one of 1,000 facets of possibility.
Okay, Sandor, what would you say to Angela concerned about blowing up her kitchen or her basement?
Well, I mean, you know, fermentation can be a powerful force, and particularly, you know, when you're fermenting, you know, very sweet things, it can be very, very vigorous. And I mean, sure, it's not unheard of for things to explode, but, you know, it really, it's not easy to do that, and there are some very straightforward precautions that you can take so you don't have an experience like that. I just wanted to, you know, I mean, I too, you know, have fermented different kinds of seeds that I'm going to save. But some of the foods and beverages that are fermented, you know, involve like a fermentation right at the harvesting stage, specifically to break down the pulp around a seed and often change the biochemistry of the seed. And two very common and beloved foods that involve that would be chocolate, where the cacao fruit is typically fermented. The pulp ferments very vigorously and breaks down, so the seeds are you know, what we make chocolate out of, you know, can be released, and it changes the biochemistry and really gives us, you know, the flavor that we love of cacao. And also coffee, where, you know, coffee berries are typically fermented. You know, same idea. So you can release the seeds that we're going to turn into the beverage of coffee that we love to drink, and also develop the flavor of this. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, varied applications of fermentation. Fiber arts use fermentation. Dyeing uses fermentation. You know, fermentation is not just the, you know, sort of most obvious fermented foods.
Well, in a moment, I'll grab a phone call, but why don't you take me back, Petra, because now you kind of give me the picture of what you're actually doing with tomato seeds and the fermentation process. How do you view that connecting to the way food systems are changing now?
What a delicious question, Evan. Oh, gosh. Well, the first thought that comes to my mind, a century ago, there were 100 seed companies between Rochester and Ithaca. Today, there are three.
Wow.
And Fruition is the only one that actually grows seed to put into packets and isn't purely a distributor. And I think of it as a revival as well. Sandor is, you know, one of many, but a very significant wave in this marvelous ocean. And I am now so excited, too, as an aside, to look up the word culture and kind of the etiology of it, because I love that we're talking about all culturing pickles and culturing, you know, Nuka Bran, and now we're talking about food systems and like human culture, and just how I love how all of these cultures are embodying the culture. But I really see this kind of revival, whether of these deeply ancient practices, whether it's making your own sauerkraut or even eating sauerkraut or saving your seed. You know, there, to be a farmer was to be a seed saver, and in the century that in the last century, that's diverged fully. But it's the pendulum swings for better and for worse, and the locus of our power and our culture is changing, and that's really exciting.
Let me go ahead and grab a quick phone call from John in Perrington, who's got some memories to share on this. Go ahead, John.
Well, I thought this discussion should not go by without talking about Phelps, regional at least, and really almost a state sauerkraut capital. They used to have, and I think they still do, a sauerkraut festival every year. There is a large sauerkraut factory at the corner on the west side of Phelps, at the corner of Route 96 and Preemption Road, that now I believe is torn down and is a flower shop. But if you go out there during cabbage harvesting season, you'll see acres and acres of cabbage with machines going down through. They have conveyor belts and people walking behind through the rows of cabbage and cutting them and putting them on trucks. We were a small farm, but we took truckloads of cabbage there many years ago when I was in my teens. So,
John, thank you for the memory and for the regional note there. That's another great way to kind of connect some of the geography of what's going on here.
Evan, can I add? Actually, sauerkraut is still made in Orleans County at the Seneca Foods plant in Geneva. So it's still there. And cabbage, I'm sure that Petra can talk to this, is very specific to how it grows in types of soil. So we have to give a shout out to our Ontario County farmers. But also on the other end of your listening spectrum, Orleans County also has a ton of cabbage. Beautiful fields, and you have to go see them because there's nothing more iconic than a beautiful cabbage field.
Pilar, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think New York State produces around 325 million pounds of cabbage a year, and we are the number 3 or number 2 producer in the country.
I will not correct Vincent. three or four, yeah. We do a lot of cabbage here in New York State, and something to be very proud of. Cabbage is very versatile as well, so I'm pretty proud of that. Another very high-ranking cultured food that we do here in New York State that we're number one in is yogurt. So we should be very proud of the fact that we are creating a very strong and very vibrant yogurt industry here in New York State.
When we talk cabbage, we're talking purple cabbage. We're talking
purple or green.
Purple is, I mean, scientifically, it's just superior.
Right?
I don't judge what people like to eat. That's not part of my
It's
judgment free.
Way better. I don't understand the green cabbage over purple cabbage people. Somebody email me and explain what's going on in your life that purple cabbage is behind green cabbage. It's like you like chocolate croissants over almond croissants. I don't get it. I need some help understanding. But we've covered a lot of ground, and before we lose the hour, we want to remind you why we're here. We're here because Vincent Fite and a number of people have put together this festival. It's the inaugural FLX Fermentation Festival. It's at the Cumming Nature Center, August 16th through the 18th. It occurs to me, Vincent, that there may be some people who've never been to the Cumming Nature Center, which is it in Naples?
It is between Naples and Honeoy. It's basically right in between. Yeah, it's kind of a trek from Rochester, but it's a great day trip.
It is not a trek from Rochester.
it's less than an hour.
It's cake.
Exactly, exactly. And then you have plenty of room to stretch your legs on 950 acres of a living laboratory and classroom where we explore all kinds of ways that humans interact with the natural world.
I took my son to see some classical music performed outside there one time, and it was phenomenal. It is a fabulous setting. We took a great hike. I just love what's happening down there. So I am biased. That is my bias. But 16th through the 18th at Cumming. And if you want to get online or at least kind of see the full menu of what's coming up, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah. Visit the website at the RMSC page, visit the Cumming Nature Center page there, and check out Fermentation Festival. And then you can always call the Nature Center with questions and check out our Facebook page for details there as well.
Before we lose the hour, you know, Pilar mentioned scales of production. I mean, what we're doing with cabbage, even the green cabbage, and yogurt. And sometimes we do, understandably, Pilar, romanticize small scale. I mean, I certainly do it. And but I want to kind of just ask you briefly how you see the different scales, and if we are too often caricaturing sort of large scale, small scale, when it comes to farming operations.
Yeah, that's a great episode in the future. In any industry we characterize, right? I work when I'm not wearing this hat, I'm wearing a theater hat. And we can do the same thing about large theater companies, small theater companies, theater tours. With farming, it's all part of our food system. And to have a functioning food system, we have to have all types, whether it's small or large. And we can see this in other rural-based states, what happens when their agriculture gets decimated and then there's no big, there's no large, there's no medium. Mm-hmm. In New York State, we're quite fortunate that we have a diversity in agriculture. We have a diversity in what is high ranking for us, whether it's animal agriculture or any other types of vegetable agriculture. So to have a functioning food system, we need to feed our own. And in New York State, we do that quite well. We innovate. We do that quite well, whether it's innovations like tiling for drainage to things that Petra's doing at Fruition Seeds. It goes to note that having a seed company that is breeding for our zone is so impossible to imagine in some food systems. And here we are, have Petra, a young business owner in Ontario County, who's doing that. I mean, there's food systems that don't have that. So we're light years ahead of other rural-based food systems. And we should feel proud of that. We have to support it. But there's room for all types in agriculture, and we need that. And we also need to export a little, whether it's export overseas or export to other states. That's kind of the nature of how agriculture works as an industry.
Yeah, and the reason I ask is I think sometimes when we caricaturize an industry, I think of CAFOs. I mean, if you're eating animals, I do think it's fair to say we're all going to look back as a society and be pretty embarrassed about how we treated some of the animals, many of the animals we ate. So we are going to need different size operations, but we can probably do it better with different standards. And it does sound like that progress is happening, you know, in different ways and different places, which is a really positive thing, I would think. Fair?
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, we all care about our land. We all care about our animals, and we learn more about that every day.
So. Can we talk about this tomorrow? And the day after tomorrow?
You guys want to just keep coming back here? We'll just do the angel hour with Petra.
Yeah.
Sandor, before we let you go here, 45 seconds. I was going to ask you about the future of fermentation, but you probably would have given me a lecture that it's really the past and the present because it's not a new thing and it's not a trend. So what do you think we most misunderstand about fermentation?
I think the single biggest thing is that people project, you know, all this anxiety that we've been taught to have about bacteria onto fermentation. And I just think that, you know, this 20th century war on bacteria idea is very, very outmoded. And, the future of medicine, the future of so many things is embracing bacteria and recognizing bacteria as the most fundamental matrix of life, the origins of all life. And, you know, no multicellular organisms have ever lived without bacteria, and we're dependent on them in a multitude of ways that we're just beginning to recognize.
Sandor Katz is the author of Wild Fermentation and the Art of Fermentation and is going to offer a keynote at the event. And the event is the inaugural FLX Fermentation Festival, August 16th through the 18th. See you here, and thanks for the time today, Sandor.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to coming up there.
I know everyone here does as well. That's Vincent Feit with us in studio. Good luck with that inaugural festival. It sounds like you're well on your way. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
And our thanks as well to Pilar McKay. Thanks for the expertise and the time once again. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
And Petra Page Mann, Fruition Seeds. The cucumbers. Thank you.
What a joy.
Let's dig in. Rob Braden, you ready to eat? Engineer, he's ready. And Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.